irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio tonight with my very best friend in the whole world, Bobby Jean Bell. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Jim. We woke up to some snow this morning. Did you have snow in Star, Idaho?
Been snowing all day.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I got up to 14 degrees, and we've made it to 26 degrees.
Yeah, we've had some teasing of spring, but not today.
Not today, no. In fact, I opened the door and I listened outside and I heard the weather going, come on, up a little bit more, up a little bit more. Nope, ain't going to happen. So that's where we are tonight. We're going to introduce here in just a few minutes. We have a new segment on the Writer's Block, and it's called the Writer's Corner. And it is definitely brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing. And we get to ask questions of writers, and some we wouldn't ask in a writer that is our guest. And our guest is certainly welcome to ask questions. I will let you know who that will be here shortly. But it's like we wanted to involve other writers in the show in a small way. And so people can call and they can ask questions. And if you want to call and ask a question of the writers, or in this particular case, Bobby Jean Bell, who's not a writer, you can always ask her what she does for a living. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Feel free to give us a holler, and we'll be happy to answer your questions as long as we keep it under about 10 minutes. So with that being said, I'm going to ask our guest tonight. Oh, I think we have a caller on, and
it's a caller.
Oh my God! Wow. It's Claire Fullerton.
We recognize that voice. Hey, Claire.
Hello, Bobby. How you doing?
I'm dancing to a Claire reel.
That's it. You're a Southern Irish fan over here in Malibu, California.
Our Southern Belle from Malibu.
That's right.
That's right. So, Claire, what have you got to say for yourself tonight?
Well, other than I just couldn't be happier to be here with two of my favorite broadcasting heroes, Jim and Bobby. Just so tickled. And, you know, it's all good here. And I have been reviewing books for the New York Journal of Books, and I'm having a blast. I'm reading a lot of great, great authors with releases that are coming out this year, and I will send you a copy and get yours on the New York Journal of Books on release day. And so it keeps me busy, and I also have completed my fifth manuscript, and it's a novel that's set in the Deep South again, and I'll tell you about it when I get it signed, but I'm in the beginning stages of that. The book has been edited, and it's ready to go, and so now we begin. And so that's where I am. I'm kind of in between books, but it feels good. I mean, I have a good frame of mind about it all.
Well, let me ask you this, Claire, because a lot of writers, a lot of people like to know from writers, where do their stories come from?
I think always, for myself, it's always some event that really touches me that leads to bigger things. Or, you know, it could be something that I'd like to explore and casually in my own way, without being overt about it, bring to the table as a point. In other words, if you have something to say about it, but the trick is to not say it. The trick is to give the story to the reader so that they can glean from it what they will. I'll give you an example. My last two books, Set in the Deep South, involved the family dynamic and the underlying premise of how we become who we become in life at the hands of the family, that's what shapes us, gives us the foundation. And then we go out into the world from that foundation and become who it is we're meant to become. But it's a cause and effect type of situation. And sometimes it can dovetail into the sins of the father, so to speak, which I'm big on. To not see, the trick is to give it to the reader to be able to compare notes in their own life. And they say to themselves, I can relate to that because my experience has been.
Right.
And so that's the trick. And so typically I go into it with something to explore, to ponder, hopefully not pontificate upon, but just to set up a premise and tell a story that brings that underlying premise into the theme alive. You know, it's almost sleight of hand, I think. And
okay.
So I think a writer goes into writing a novel with an idea of what they want to say, even if what they want to say is all about the setting. And because that can be all about the culture, right? If I said it in the Deep South, what do I want to say? What's the setting spawn? Well, the people, for instance. You know, the climate, the this, and that, and the other. So, yeah. But I think that, and I was talking to a friend of mine just yesterday about this, it all begins with the story. What's the story you're going to tell? What's the story?
Right.
You know, so you're weaving all of that together. You're really weaving about, I think, about four or five threads together and doing what? In telling a story.
Going to ask our guests the same question. Where do your ideas for your books come from?
I write a little bit differently than that. I'm what I call it an intuitive writer. And so I wait for the muses to speak to me. I don't outline. I don't have an idea. I just go, who's here and who's got something to say? And that's my quest for. It's like fifth book I've written like that. And it works for me in an interesting way. So I use a lot of meditation and connect with my muses and see who shows up. And that's kind of where I go with it.
Okay. Let me ask this of both the writers that are on. Do you oftentimes or do you ever use the scenario or the scenario or the locations of your books as characters in your books?
I can really speak to that. Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, my settings are paramount, I think, to my books, and they happen all over the world, depending on where I want to go and research. No, I'm just kidding. But I have gone to Ireland and I've gone to Scotland to research, and I've been in Minnesota and in the Midwest, which is where the latest one is. And I always write a play that comes alive. So it's super important, particularly in this last one. It's really important.
Okay, Claire?
Well, I think I can second that. Because I did live in Ireland. I did set dance into an Irish reel there because I wanted to talk about the place. I wanted to talk about the people that it spawned. And the reason it spawns the people it does is because of the place. And the same thing in the Deep South with Mourning Dove and Little T. But I'll take it a step further and say in my last two Southern set novels, the house itself was a character, as in if these walls could talk, you know, that kind of a thing. And I wanted the reader to be so familiar by the time they got to, you know, the first quarter of the book, with being able to walk out of one room and down that hall and go into the other room, that if you give it to them in a less is more kind of a way, you know, the reader will fill in their idea of what needs to be in that room, as opposed to like really giving too much kind of a thing. And so you want to hit the high notes and leave the rest to the reader. But yeah, I'm big on a house, you know, that a child comes of age in.
Okay. Bobby?
I have a quick question. As a reader, I love it when I would say what I'm reading has a lot of texture to it. Mm-hmm. And I've read other books that I'll notice, well, that feels sort of flat. What is it about this book versus another book? Is there some advice that you each might have for writers about how to add, make sure you have elements of texture?
You want to go ahead?
Sure. Well, I assume I offered it in my words, and I think I can.
Yes, or well, in your work, Claire, I mean, we can touch and feel, and we can feel the what we're eating, what we're drinking, what the wind is like, what the how, you know, the rooms are like. You give us a lot of texture without sort of data dump. I mean, we really feel.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had an acting teacher years and years and years ago talk to me about the subtext that people carry in to a scene or whatever, and that they bring all of their senses with them, you know. Mm-hmm. And the question was, you know, when you leave a movie, do you walk out in your mind with how it looked, or do you walk out with the music that was in the movie, or do you walk out with how it feels? And I immediately just knew how it feels, you know, how it feels. And that's, everybody perceives things differently, or, you know, kind of runs it through a filter or whatever. And we tend to be stronger in one sense, more so than the others. And for me, it's always about the way it feels. And I remember even with Little T, my last one that came out in 2020, going down, flying from California to Memphis and then driving to Como, Mississippi, so that I could walk on foot, you know, through the town, through the main street of the town. And then I spent a few hours driving around with a local that lived there, because I wanted to be able to feel the place. You know, and when I lived in Ireland, I was the same way. I walked that bog, you know, that was behind the house where I lived, pretty much every day. And then across the street down to the sea, kind of a thing. Because, you know, you walk in the region on foot, and you get how it feels. And it's a very individual thing. And so I like to bring that into, you know, the texture, to speak to your question. I want the reader to have a sense of how it feels, you know? Mm-hmm. And that can be, you know, through description of what's in the room, describing what's in the room and all that. But still, you want to give a sense of the feel of a place, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wendy?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm much the same as that. And a big piece for me is feeling the energy of the landscape. So I'm like an energy worker, and I need to actually feel that energy and then translate that somehow. I think also texture is related for sure around the senses and description, but also around voice. And so, you know, it's different than a book that's plot based, where you can tell. I know what you're saying. Like, there are some books, I'm also a book reviewer, and there's some books I read and they've got a lot of points in there, but there's no with them. I'm just
you're
not
so
weaving
right.
It, right? I'm just not there. I'm like,
you are
so what?
So right.
You know, so what?
Although I admire that. I mean, I admire people, and I don't work with an outline either. I might create one when I'm halfway into it. Like, okay, where are we going here? I might do that when I'm halfway into it, but I never, ever, ever am that organized on the front end. And
yeah.
And so, yeah, it becomes ultimately an emotional experience. And
yeah.
to second exactly what you said, you know, with the plot term, plot twist, plot turn, plot, you know,
yeah.
If I'm not connected to it emotionally, you've lost me.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing.
Not everybody's like that, though.
Talking about Ireland, I actually in the, not this book, but the book that I wrote just before that last year, I climbed to the top of Croghan Hill because it was a time travel situation where I'd had a king from 200 BC ritually inaugurated and murdered, like executed on the top of this hill. So my daughter and I actually went and climbed up through a cow pasture, and because I wanted to stand on the top of that hill. And you know what Ireland's like, you can see all the hilltops because they used to burn fires on the top of them, right? And so we had to get up there because I needed to see all the land and walk in his footsteps. But what's kind of cool is that that hill is still there. I mean, it's very different. It's been completely like clear cut, you know, and it would have been forested. But that just gave me such a good feel for what the place was like. And then when they come back at the end and they pop up in that hill, I'm able to describe exactly what's going on there. So I think it's super important to go and, like, I'm writing about standing stones. I go and I touch them. And the only time we had them in, I went to, I'm in Yates's house. Right, in Sligo. I love Sligo.
You're talking about Borthali Lee.
I am. Right? Yeah. And so I climb up the spiral stair because I'm like, oh my, it's the gyre. I'm in the gyre and I'm touching all the walls. And I'm like, oh, this is so fantastic. And the next morning I wake up and like my eyes are swollen shut because of all the dust, because I'm so allergic to it. And that was, it was like, and there's my romance with Yates. And so I had to go to the chemist and get some, like.
It's not a very big house, you know, where he was.
And no. I'm like, oh, there's this
little
bedroom.
Bit old garden.
Touch this, touch that, touch your face. No.
And okay.
He was, like running, he was running in a closet, basically.
We have to cut this off, but. Claire, thank you so much for your call and your
always a pleasure. Y'all take good care, and I hope to catch up with you sooner rather than later.
We will.
We want to read that
meeting.
I'm not in a rush this time. I'm not in a rush.
Okay.
I'll be in touch. Bye bye, y'all.
Take care, my friend.
Bye.
We're gonna take a real quick break, and we'll be back with our guest and her bio here in just a few minutes. But right now, this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after a short word from Tuscany Bay Books. I was sitting in my private office, looking out my private window, dropping private eye drops in my private eye, when a tall blonde walked by, and you asked me how I know she was tall. My office is on the second floor. And then there was a knock on the door, so I jumped out of my chair, I tripped over the couch, I unlatched the latch, and there stand a beautiful blonde holding a manuscript, and I said, hi. She said, hi. What can I do for you? I said, well, she said, I have a manuscript, and I want my book published. And I said, well, you come right. It's neat books. Why don't you come in, and we'll have a drink on it. But all I have is a bottle of ink. So we drank that and stood around feeling mighty blue. But you don't have to feel mighty blue, because at Tuscany Bay, we'll not only format your book, we'll proofread it, we'll edit it, we'll get it printed, and we'll bit you a cover that will make your head spin and make you so proud of the work that you've done. Tuscany Bay Books, you can't go wrong, and you can find us on the web at www.tuscanybaybooks.com. And if you see a blonde walk by holding a manuscript and a bottle of blue ink, just say hi. And we are back with our guest. And if you want to call and talk to our guest tonight, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And the opening music that you heard right after intros was donated by a friend of mine, Mr. Rick Gomez. A piece called Flow Grass. The music by Rick is called, I forgot.
It's escaped me as well.
Anyway, we'll play it next week and I'll remember. Okay, our guest tonight, Ms. Wendy Hawken, W.L. Hawken. She's Romance Adventures. We're going to talk about that in just a minute because it's not really what she writes. Her Hollystone Mysteries series features a coven of West Coast witches. You know, I knew a coven of West Coast witches once in Tacoma. They're all over up there. They're like, they're the thickest flies on a bull's butt.
The rainforest.
Oh, it's got to be. Well, of course, Vancouver Island in the city of Victoria is famous for its witches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to charm a killer, to sleep with stones, to render a raven, killer. Never mind. It's welcome to the writer's block. Otherwise, it's Wendy. Hello, Wendy.
Hello, Jim. Bobby.
I have to say, we were discussing a little bit earlier about your book. You know, it doesn't read like a normal romance novel. I have to say thank you, because for the while there we had our fill of romance novels. But I have to say that normally romance novels, and Bobby, I think you'll back me up on this, most romance novels don't go into the depth of character that you went into with Jesse and Hawk. Now, the name of the book is Lure, Jesse and Hawk. And it's an interesting story. You're really, I mean, giving away a whole lot of it just by talking about it, because there's a, you have a lot of little Easter eggs in there rolling around that are. the premise of the story, of course, is that I'll let you explain it.
Yeah.
Okay. So both of them have gone off to they're on the a Chippewa reservation in Minnesota, and they're both there. He is trying to lose himself, and he's a wounded doctor. He's trying to lose himself. She's a vegan wildlife photographer, and she is trying to find herself because they both had this sort of tragic loss of partners, and they're both in different places on the reservation, but they come together in a rather crazy way and have a blow up. And so, yeah, that's kind of where it comes together as the romance, but then a whole bunch of other things happen because, mm-hmm. as I said, I'm an intuitive writer. Things happen I didn't expect, and so it just took off. Yeah.
So you're like most writers, well, not most writers, but a lot of writers, myself included. Once the story gets going, you allow the protagonists to lead you to where the story is going to go.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, absolutely. In this one. And I mean, you know, I can say because it's on the back cover anyway, that basically after they have this first kind of meet cute scene in the beginning, which is a romantic kind of a trope. And she's filming a buck. And I actually dreamed this scene 30 years ago. So I actually saw it in my dream and then got up and wrote it. And so she's looking through her camera lens and she's filming this gorgeous buck. And as she's really in on the eyes, and then all of a sudden, she's watching through the lens and it dies right in front of her while she's watching it. And it's super traumatic for her because she's an animal lover. And her whole thing is about showing the best of realizes that she'd heard this sound and he's actually behind her and he shot this buck. And so she gets super mad at him and there's a big fight. And he thinks she's an idiot, and, you know, but he likes her grit. And, yeah, so that's kind of how they meet. And then she finds out that his story and starts to empathize with him. So when she finds out a friend of his who was his mentor, this old Indigenous man, is dying, she decides she's going to go out and find him in the middle of the reserve. She's taken off on her horse. And just before she goes, she finds in her shed the bones sticking up through the dirt of an Indigenous woman that's been missing. And I didn't know that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when that happened, and I'm like, oh, there's a hand. What? Who is this? And so then I ask, who are you? And the whole story of Ruby Little Bear. And that all came out very intuitively. I wrote the whole story as she told me, and then I wove it through. And then it all comes together in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I think, the second or third time that we've had Indigenous women found.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby, isn't that right? I mean,
yes, because Mark Edward Langley has written two that we've read so far that involve missing and murdered Indigenous women. And we really got some opportunity to learn more about. I did not know what a tragic situation this is, not only here in the States, but I believe in Canada as well. Mm-hmm. So yes, I when that scene popped up, I questioned, or is this going to be, you know, somebody else that got buried there? And so I didn't know. So there were lots of good, you know, nothing was, Jim, everything was a little surprise, you know.
Everything was. As a matter of fact, in the opening sequence of the book, when she turns around and there stands this golden god,
Apollo was right there.
I mean, I'm looking at the vision that you've created of this man. I mean, I fell in love with the guy. He's like I said earlier, he's like every man's vision of what he wants to be.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a mountain man to him, right, Jim? I mean, exactly. there's a Native American and mountain man. He's living, right. He's living on his own. He's living without technology. He knows, you know, how to do everything. As though it was 100 years ago or right. 200 years ago. But he's a bit of a Renaissance man at the same time.
Well, he's 100% off the grid.
Very capable and very smart. You know, we discover that had a situation come up in his life that just sort of took him another direction. But I thought their backstories were really interesting.
Yeah, I did too.
As Rainey's, the backstory as well. And then we were talking earlier before we were on the air about two other characters, Sam and Ira. Do you want to take a moment and talk a little bit about character development and how that all comes about? Because this book is just...
They were fascinating, Sam and Ira.
Lavish character development.
Yeah, I should tell you that kind of I wrote the bones of this in my piece at the back. And when I wrote it, Sam and Ira were there, but they were not the Sam and Ira they are today. They were kind of, you know, 30 years ago, I just kind of plunked them in. They were secondary characters. And then this time they started talking to me. And in both of them really blossomed. And I think that there is sympathy for them there, even though they started out being kind of the antagonist. They're two creepy guys, right? The two creepy guys that are hanging around the small town, ogling all the girls. I mean, this is who they start out being. But then we find out there's a whole lot of other stuff going on with these guys.
Right.
And I think that they have a character arc. And at the end, both of them, I think, go through a kind of a change. And one for the better, one not such a better ending for me to write them. And I really love them. And I loved their voices. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but I felt anyway, when I was writing their scenes, the voice is different than the other scenes. Mm-hmm. So I really tried to do that so that Sam came through for sure in his way. And then Ira comes through in a whole different way too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ira is an interesting character. Mm-hmm. As I said earlier, before we went on the air, it's like he's a big, almost a Lenny of Lenny and George from Of Mice and Men. And he does not realize what he is doing is bad. He just knows that it's for God. Mm-hmm. And that's his justification for everything that he does. Mm-hmm. 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 But they were all, go ahead.
That's how he survived prison. You know, he is like when I got to sort of the end of that, and even I'm not going to say what it is, but the reason that he got put in jail in the first place, you know, my heart goes out to him because mm-hmm. he was trying to do something good.
Right.
And didn't really realize what he was doing. He's a man that doesn't know his own strength. Like you said, when you said Lenny and George, I mean, I was an English teacher for like 20 years and I did not put that together.
Yeah. Well, they're somewhat reminiscent of two characters that were in a number of my books, Lenny and Whitey.
Okay.
Lenny and Whitey they're like old ladies. They're nefarious. They're just bad guys all the way around, but they're redeemable.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, they're redeemable. They can do this, and they get caught and they go, okay, well, you caught me again. You know, or they go to jail and they're arguing all the way down the street because, you know, well, you did that. No, I didn't. You know, it's your fault. You made me go here and I did not, you know, and it's like, they're like that. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhat reminiscent of Lenny and Whitey and Lenny and George. Mm-hmm. And I really, I liked them as characters. And I don't think they were antagonists more than they were. They propped up the story.
Okay.
And they tied some pieces together.
Both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they start, okay, so they, in 30 years ago, they started out as antagonists. this time, I think for those two, for sure, there's a theme of redemption in this book. And
right.
I think pretty much everybody, except for one character who is definitely an antagonist, mm-hmm. is there can be redeemed. I do right. believe that. And I also had someone, Alexa Blyan, who a young, and she said it's a story about compassion. And I thought, oh, you know, that was another one for me. I went, oh, it is about compassion all the way around. And I hadn't thought of that either. So yeah. It's kind of interesting what people draw out that uh-huh. I don't put it in there on purpose. I don't say I'm going to write these themes. I know some people do, like, these are the themes and I'm going to write these themes and this is what's going to happen. But I don't do that. I just tell it. And in the end, I went, yeah, this is about compassion. And, uh-huh. you know, even well, Sam, when he has his change up there,
which right.
that's one of my favorite scenes.
Right. When he
Go ahead, puts please. It together.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, did you want to take the break?
Oh, we can, and just get it over
yeah.
with.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Take the break, and then I have a question.
Wait, we'll be right back with you. Yeah, you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block, and we'll return shortly right after this brief message from LA Talk Radio. If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you have listened to talk radio, and let's be honest, found yourself saying, "I can do that better." Well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included. And we're looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says Become a Host. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say. Now let's hear it. LA Talk Radio.
And we are back with our guest, Wendy Hawken. And if you want to call and talk to Wendy, the number here is 323-203-0815. Okay, Bobby Jean, take it away.
Well, there's some other characters in this book. We've got Reba and Sister.
I love Reba.
And we have River Otters, and we have Marmalade, I think is one of the names of some kittens. And so these are all characters, when I talked about texture earlier, I think these are all characters that play a significant role, both in action as well as just bringing in that element of the animal mm-hmm. to our main characters. Can you talk a little bit about those characters?
Sure. I'm an animal lover for sure, and I spent my teenage years riding around on my horse in the bush by myself because I'm an introvert. So that's really, I think that's how Jesse ends up with Reba, who is an Appaloosa, and I always loved Appaloosas. You love Appaloosas too.
I actually had one that would reminded me of totally okay. of Reba.
Oh, good.
I knew you would love Reba.
Oh, I did too. Good. I love Reba.
That's good. Yeah. So, I mean, I always end up with either dogs or horses or both in my stories. So sister is in there. She is a wolf, and she just kind of showed up with him. So, she's Hawk's companion of the last 3 years. But even then, he's going through a thing where he's going to have to leave her. So he's got this sort of tragic thing going on, which he knows she's about to go off and join her own pack. And so that's kind of sad, but he's getting through that. Mm-hmm. There are kittens, yes. There are otters. And I think that there's a little piece in here about inhumane trapping. You know,
yes.
I mean, because it's just, it's part and parcel to being in that, you know, kind of the world, right? And leaving junk in rivers. And I'm not even sure where that came from, but it certainly became a big part of it, is having all the the horrible stuff that gets left in the bottom of lakes and rivers and on landfills and all that stuff too, right? So mm-hmm. there are a lot of sneaky little bits in there that I didn't put on purpose. They just kind of fit the text of the
story mm-hmm. that you're not looking for, but when it's there, it totally fits.
Mm-hmm. Jim, how did you like that scene where Hawk, there's a recounting of Hawk and that black bear?
Oh, I loved it.
I knew you would like that.
I mean, here's a guy trying to talk a bear out of attacking him. Yeah. Thinking, you know, okay, he's going to go away now. No, he's not.
Yeah, you know, I had somebody say, oh, no, that's not even for fiction. That's too much. And I was like, no, I don't know where you live, but people get away from black bears all the time. You're a little worse for wear, but it certainly is something that can be done, right? So it's not too far-fetched. I think it's part of who he is, you know?
Yeah. And they have no fear of man. They will just stand their ground and just keep rooting out stuff that they're doing. You can ride right by them, and they'll just look at you. And most of the time, sometimes you get a little pissy.
Unless you're in their cave.
Well, yeah.
Winter's coming on.
I've never been that stupid, but hey, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing you didn't do is you didn't stereotype any of your characters, and I really like that.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Open to grow on their own without you putting a stereotype on them. I especially noticed it with Hawk and actually with Lenny and Sam. Mm-hmm. They were totally non-stereotypical, yet they were redeemable. Well, one was redeemable, one, like you said, was not so much. But and then Jessa, I think Jessa, romance stories, except she was above and beyond that. Mm-hmm. She's a lot deeper than most romance novel heroines go. Is that heroine? Heroine?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the fact that you didn't ascribe any preconceived notion of any of your characters. They were all allowed to grow on their own. I love that in an author.
Well, and I would like a spin-off book about Rainey and Matt.
Well, there's Rainey and Matt, but there's also I mean, this is a series, right? This is the first one in a series. So
right.
I would really like something to happen for Sam.
Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh.
You know, I think Sam needs, he deserves that. I mean, look mm-hmm. who his dad is. I mean, mm-hmm. he deserves something good to happen to him, I think, right. after what he's been through. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. And you know what, Ira, he's still around. He could have some redemption down the road too. Mm-hmm. You know?
No, not Lenny.
Ira Griswold.
Well, Sam is almost drawn into everything, and not purposely. It just happened, mm-hmm. you know. And him being who he was, he just got naturally drawn into circumstances that were way beyond his control.
Yeah, I had so much fun writing that scene where he's stalking them, and then. He gets so drunk, and then the next day he tries to follow them, and his whole whole adventure in the river. I was like, what? And all the stuff that happens to him there. It's so much fun writing that way because I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and said, wow,
wonderful place to get away to, and I think it was so well described, and yet it didn't feel like it was. Primitive, but it didn't feel it. You know, she's able to have her tea. She's mm-hmm. able to, his description, he goes in, you know, to put the bear's tooth there, and he kind of looks around and you see it through his eyes, Hawk's eyes, and you see it through her eyes and how she operates in that space. And I thought you had to have gone to different cabins, and this is a compilation of like the cabin you would like to stay in.
Yeah, you know, I have been wanting to live in a cabin in the bush my entire life. I really have. And I know it's not quite as romantic as it sounds.
No, but, it's not.
No, it's not. I can't imagine.
And it was large enough to bring Reba in the night it rained. I thought, Reba in there. That was.
Yeah, I've done that. I took my horse. I was on a trail that there was an old miner's cabin. And we were out way out in this Live Oak Canyon area, way beyond Riverside. And it started to pour rain. And it was like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And I went out and I grabbed my, at the time I had my little Arab. Her name was Mariah. And I just brought her inside the cabin with me.
That's awesome. So you really related to a lot of this stuff.
Oh, a lot of the stuff with the horses. Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh,
I knew he would be. Wendy, I just kept thinking as I'm turning pages, oh, Jim will like that. She wrote that for Jim.
Yeah, I'm a horseman from way back, way back.
So in other words, men will enjoy this book as well.
Well, yes, they will. Yes. And I think because it's not strictly a it is story. And with that, we're going to have to get into process. Go ahead, Wendy. Finish.
I know. I'm looking at what time it is.
The genre really is romantic suspense. So in a romantic suspense, it's like you take a romance and about half of it is the romance and about half of it is the suspense and some other mystery or adventure going on. And for me, because I can't just write a romance, I mean, my other books, none of them have a happy ending. No, there's no happily ever after. I tried for four books to give this guy a happily ever after, and it's not happening. And my other character. And so, you know, somebody said, you know, why don't you write just a mainstream kind of romance? And I was like, well, I actually found this one that's 30 years old. I think I can do something with it. And I did. So that's really... that's a part of it that is a romance, is that they do get together in the end. It's a must if you're writing a romance. it's part of it. So how they differ is really important.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it'd be interesting to revisit them. I mean, it does have the happy ending that romances need. And yet I also felt they'd worked through and sort of come full circle in their lives. And they did that partly through the relationship together, but that didn't necessarily mean they were going to have a life together. I mean, I didn't feel that we'd have tragedy if they decided to separate, but that they were healed. They were each going to be able to pick up and go on, whether it was together or together for a while, or where life would take them now that, you know, they've gotten to this point. So it was okay with me that they were together, but in my mind, I think as a reader, I thought, you know, it'd be really interesting to revisit them in a couple of years and see where are they?
What could happen, you know? And there's so many other little characters in there, like Hank the Butcher that I'd like to play with, and Giselle, who, you know, the fancy baker from the city. And like, there's
It's a charming town. It's a charming town.
I actually asked my my newsletter people to help me with it and to help me like create some characters and businesses. And it was fantastic because I got some really good ideas from people that I used. And that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, you have a sheriff in there that's a rat.
Yeah, he needs to come up.
You got to have a corrupt cowboy sheriff. Come on.
I know you have to. It's just part of it.
He was the only one that was sort of... stereotyped. I mean it, but you
almost.
Know,
yeah.
But you have to have a guy like that.
Well, yeah, because they need somebody to play off.
You do. Somebody has to mess things up for you, right?
Exactly. Golly, let's go ahead and break. We only have about 7 minutes left. So we are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back with you after a brief word from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email mickey@gmail.com.
Creative Edge. It's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity. And we are back with our author of tonight, Wendy Hawken. And okay, Bobby, hit her with it.
Do you get writer's block? And if you do, what do you do about it? And if you don't get it, what do you think of it?
All right.
Boom. How's that?
I can totally answer that question. A couple of years ago, actually, pre-COVID years, I did a series of workshops because I was writing a nonfiction book called From Spirit to Page, Writing with Your Muse, which was based on my writing process. And in that, I talk about how if you're thinking, you're going to get writer's block. But if you use this kind of meditation method where you're connecting through your muses, you're going to have writer's block. So I look at like the alpha, beta waves and the theta waves, the brain waves, right? And if you can get yourself into a state of theta, you're going to open up to your muses. And then it's trying to get all of those words that are floating around onto the page. So that's what I did in my workshops. And everybody wrote. These were folks that just really wanted they're like, oh, I have these ideas, but I can't get them on the paper. And I don't have an idea. And I don't know what to do with this. And everybody was writing amazing things using that method. So I think if you're having writer's block, it's because you're thinking too much. And you basically need to get out of your own way.
That's a good take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my take. And it certainly works.
Yeah. When did you first decide that you wanted to start writing?
Yeah, you know, I just feel your way through life. And so as a teenager, you know, I was writing angsty poetry and really good in English and really bad at math and science. And so I wrote all those. And then when I married a guy in the music industry, and I already played piano. So then I started learning how to play chords and charts. And then I started writing music, like putting lyrics to music. And that was great. And so I did that. And then when I was divorcing him, that's when I wrote this novel. So,
okay.
I was writing this, and I was also starting my degree in Indigenous studies at the time. I was in my mid-30s, so I wasn't a young person going to university. I didn't graduate high school till I was 33. Yeah. Oh, God, I did a lot. You both did. Lots of different hats. And yeah, so I don't know. And then when I was teaching English, it was so stressful that I used to come home on weekends and just like write these really like sexy novels, the Hollystone Mysteries. They're pretty sexy novels. And that's how I got through being an English teacher in high school. Because really, introverts should not be high school teachers.
No. Well, neither should extroverts. I was going to teach history, and I decided I didn't like kids all that much. So I did what every history teacher in the world does. I went to work for my dad selling.
Okay.
He owned a paint company, and that's what I did. But I also was a musician for a number of years.
Right.
So there's a parallel universe.
Yeah.
Owned horses, parallel universe. Became a writer later on in life. Yeah. Parallel universe.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I do like kids. The kids weren't the issue for me. It was more about having to like I started teaching really late, and it was pretty much the straightest job I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, having to kind of be in that, like everything mm-hmm. is timed out and there's bells and you have to have this and it has to fit in the time. And I don't live like that. It's really hard. And then having 1200 bodies with all that energy and all that axe, all that perfume and I was coming home and lying on the couch and watching episodes of Big Bang Theory, you know, like, yeah. And then I thought, okay, no. And then, holidays and weekends, I wrote the Hollystone Mysteries, which, you know, if you're looking for something really different, that's where to go. Yeah.
Well, perhaps we'll get you back on and talk to you about your Hollystone Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we are out of time.
So I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight. And don't go away, because after we close off the show, we hang around for a few minutes and chat. So
awesome. I thank you so much. When I saw that it was irreverent, I was a little bit worried.
Irreverent
is used in one of your sayings somewhere.
Yes.
And
that's right.
It's
part of our tagline. This is live radio, but it's also internet radio.
Right.
Which is where most radio is going because of the problems with everything else. And you're free to say pretty much what you want, just like kind of like cable TV.
Okay.
We've had one or two guests come on and drop the F-bomb, but not many.
Not many, but there are other shows. I mean, that's the beauty of LA Talk Radio, is there's all kinds of fabulous shows.
Right. So, yeah. LA Talk Radio is full of really, really, really good stuff. And
yeah.
We're proud to be a member, and we've been there 7 years and
yes.
Seven.
Awesome.
It's a good home. It's a wonderful home. They treat us very well.
That's for sure. Our guest tonight was Wendy Hawken, and her new book is Lure, Jesse and Hawk. And it can be picked up at Amazon. In fact, I saw it there, and I saw it at a couple other places online. Mm-hmm. So any place you buy your books, ask for Lure, Jesse and Hawk. It is not just a romance novel. It's not just your romance novel. It is a great, great story. It's a lot of fun to read, and there's some wonderfully put together characters. Thank you again, Wendy, for joining us.
Thank you.
And next week we have Rachel Tamayo. And her new book is called Mine, and it's the third in the Deadly Sin series. So well, you know of Rachel. She's one of Mickey's.
Yeah. Yes.
And I believe she's been on the show before.
She has. She has.
And we'll have her back. And other than that, announcements, I have none other than good night. And thank you so much for joining us again. I mean, we know you have other things to do on Thursday nights, and we're glad that you deigned to join us, but me and Bobby and Richard usually in our little hour on the net and worldwide broadcast. So for myself and Bobby and Jim Bell and the bookie, without whom this show would not be possible, Sam Haston. And Richard Polinelli, who is absent because of a family emergency, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.